With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome back to Ironcast. Ginger Pele is here once again, and also joining us this week, one of the most beloved West Ham goalkeepers of recent years, second generation Hammer. Welcome Dave Martin to Ironcast.
Thanks guys, thank you.
You two have been playing golf with Jimmy Walker, who won the competition that you played in for the Bobby Moore Foundation in controversial circumstances.
Well, it's not controversial, he cheated.
Yeah,
out and out.
I'm going to go straight out and say it.
Bandito, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, anyone who knows golf knows that you can't come in on an 18 handicap and shoot 45 points.
Yeah. There was a few boos around the place.
Me and Dave go on these days quite often, and you do see it quite often, but you don't expect it from an ex-player. he went up there and picked up a new, brand new golf trolley for the prize of the singles.
Yeah.
His team won the event as well on 99 points. So if you know your golf, that's pretty much impossible.
Yeah.
He won an iPad for that, got booed, got in his car, happy as an Abbey, drove home.
Put it on Instagram.
Yeah. Like it was all fine.
All for the fans.
So I'm calling that out. Jimmy Walker cheated.
No goalkeepers union, Dave. You're throwing him under the bus.
I can't support that, to be fair, Jim.
I've been at a golf day before and someone's come in with a ridiculous score, gone up to get their prize, and I threw a bread roll at them. Because I thought it was that. Shocking that they've blatantly cheated. Anyway, I'm not bitter about it at all.
Welcome, Dave. Obviously, I don't know, younger fans may not know, but your dad, Alvin Martin, was a West Ham great. And I wondered, something I've always wanted to ask second generation footballers is, are you good because in the garden you had a professional footballer as a kind of dad and coach? Or was it genetics, or is it a bit of a combination of the two things?
Do you know what? One thing I say about Dad is that he never really put any pressure on me or Joe. He almost just said, look, as long as you're enjoying it. I mean, I used to be a centre-back until I was 14. And I just said to Dad one day, I said, I don't enjoy it. And I was playing at a really good level. And I just come in and I said, look, you know, I'd rather be in goal. He went, all right then, well, let's just start you getting to a side. So I went into a Sunday league team, started playing for my district, and then got kind of scattered by Wimbledon. And that was literally, to be fair, I remember coming up the stairs one day and him talking to my mum. And they were saying, look, we've got a crack on with Dave now. Like, you know, he's GCSE, he's really behind. Obviously, I'm a bit of a thicko. And I was like, no, wait. Like I said, I was playing Sunday league at the time and I thought, no, I'm still going to make it. I'm still going to be a professional. And ignorance is bliss almost. And I kind of believed in it. But I had support from my dad and my mum whatever I wanted to do. So yeah, that was...
Was you getting bored of... Not bored. Was you not happy playing football in general, or would you just didn't want to play centre half?
Well, I was at Tottenham, so that probably...
That's probably
we
why.
We have to bring that up. Dear, oh dear. But that's weird. You were at Tottenham as a defender, and then you left there and was like, I want to start in Sunday League.
And I was like literally playing for my district, Havering, and ended up getting scouted when I was 15 by Wimbledon. And then I was playing for under-16s England by the time I was 16. So within 2 years almost, I was like playing at a decent and I think I was useless, to be fair, because I was good, obviously good with my feet, but there was so much I had to kind of learn.
Why do you think you chose goalkeeper? Did you always have an eye on it?
There's nutters in there, and I used to love diving at people's feet. I used to love making saves. You know, I did really understand the responsibility that goalkeepers almost have But I just enjoyed playing in goal and making a difference, because like you can either be the hero or the villain, isn't it?
So were you just like, when you're playing for Spurs as defender, you dipping in goal? How do you cross that? I don't understand how you go. Can I go in goal today? Or?
Well, I used to have Mickey Hazard was my coach, and we only had one goalkeeper, and we should train at White Hart Lane, and they were like, right, we're playing a small sided game. Does anyone want to go in goal? And at White Hart Lane, they used to have like this glass, and my mum, she used to take me because dad was busy, obviously with Southend at the time, and she looked down. She goes, "Where is he?" And I'd be in the goal, like
so she couldn't see.
Dave, like you're meant to be the centre back, and like you're in goal all the time, like so. I just got the bug of being a goalkeeper from that, I think. And then I just, you know, because I enjoyed it so much. I think when you enjoy anything, I think you get better and better at it, which thankfully I did.
Well, before you start playing for Spurs, obviously your dad is West Ham legend.
Mm.
Growing up, you must have, were you a West Ham fan? I hope so.
I didn't know anything else. Yeah. Like it was normal for me to just come into, obviously Chabot at the time, you know, I would have been two or three going into these Christmas parties, seeing, you know, fighting with Julian Dix and Ian Bishop, like, you know, Dixie tied me up with a skipping rope before training, left me there the whole time. I just thought it was normal. Like everything I knew about West Ham, like, you know, I had no choice other to support this team. And that buzz on the Saturday when you're seeing it, just watching the crowd. It was just a real, like, I look back now, an honour to be a part of. I mean, you had it with your kids in it, and they probably won't realise how lucky they are until they actually get to a certain age.
It's mad, like with your dad as well. I bet we're fortunate as players, because certainly my kids now, you know, they get a chance to come down here and meet you guys and meet the players and all that, and it's probably the same with your dad, was it back then?
Yeah.
So it's like my kids are mad West Ham fans, absolutely love it, hear every game, and I think when you're part of West Ham, as you know, as Alvin obviously is an absolute legend, it's sort of, I've said it before and I say it 100 times again, you sort of get the feeling that you're involved in the club forever, and it's part of your life, for the rest of your life, and I'm sure Dave will say the same. That's how it is for me and my family.
It is for me, it's like a drug, like, and I was lucky enough to be a part of it, like, obviously growing up, and then you start your own career, and then, you know, you go even though you're attached to it, but as soon as I walk back through the door again, it was like, oh my God, like I've missed this. And it's just all comes back to me.
Slightly better facilities, I'd say. From when he was there the first time.
But also I had the other side of it as well. I had the thinking, is it going to be as good as I hope?
Yeah.
And I've got to say, it was 10 times better.
Really? Oh, brilliant.
Like, you know, just through the people that, you know, Pete was there. Obviously, Eddie, the old kid man. Shirley was in the canteen. But it had them people. But, you know, what Nobes had created at the time, in that dressing room with all like the British lads and even the lads that are coming in, it just felt like home straight away.
Did those people you mentioned, like Shirley in the kitchen, they remember you being a kid?
Like she used to look out, obviously dad would go out for training and then she'd be supplying me with Lucozade and wine guns, and literally I'd be climbing the walls. Absolute nutter, me and little and Joe. So she remembered me straight away, and obviously Pete in there. So
like I speak to Craig Bellamy quite a lot. Obviously he wasn't at West Ham too long. I don't know if anyone's heard it, the way he speaks about West Ham still now. Like he's played for some big clubs, Bellas, and you know, tremendous player. He speaks about West Ham like unbelievable, like the impact it had on his career. And it's the same sort of thing, the dressing room you come into, the people that are around the football club at the time, it's got a massive part in his heart, Bellas, and he wasn't here too long really, and he still talks about West Ham every day.
I wonder, Dave, what was your bedroom like? Did you have West Ham like quilt, West Ham curtains? Did you have a picture of your dad on the wall?
No, I didn't have any of that, because obviously dad being dad, it was just, I just see him every day anyway. I thought, what's the putting you on the wall for? But I had West Ham kits. It was all about, you know, the kits that I remember growing up and seeing the training kits and just going in. It was just like a normal thing, just really. It just kind of, ignorance is bliss again. Like, so.
Do you remember your first game, or would you have been two or three? It's crazy.
I remember dad actually, the first time, I can't remember what game it was, but I remember there was a linesman that absolutely got it. Dad was like this, like he was like 2 inches away from his face, screaming at him because he never put his flag up. I remember having a birthday. I think I was about 8 at the time. And dad got sent off just before half time against Sheffield Wednesday.
I remember this game.
Yeah.
Was he got sent off in really controversial
that's
circumstances.
Right. Yeah,
he went, brought down Mark Bright.
That's the one. Yeah. So that's what. So that was my birthday, and I had it for my mates.
Oh, like, I from bet school he was in and a great that.
Like, yeah. So yeah, he came out, and I just thought, I'm never having a birthday at a game again. Like, so
I'll be speaking to dad tonight.
That red card got rescinded. Actually,
it did. It did. Yeah. It was on the halfway line.
He kind of falls over. It's an interesting. It was outrageous at the time. He kind of falls over, but he's technically the last man. But it's on the halfway line.
Yeah. The old arm did come out. Though,
yeah, like, the arm just. He's kind of has brought him down as the last man.
But he sounds very similar to me, your dad, because linesmen were my biggest hate as well. Because I wasn't the quickest. You just stand on the halfway line and stick your arm. Yeah. I'm praying for an offside. And if it wasn't, linesman's getting it.
Yeah. But getting sent off, Ginge. Like, what do you do when you get sent off?
Cool.
What did you just go in there?
Yeah, just go in and sit in the dressing room. I got a silly red against Watford, Slavanger, and I was out of contract and we lost 2-0 and I was out of contract that summer and we were 2-0 down, made a stupid tackle on N'Golo. It was a bad tackle actually, got a straight red, and I remember just sat in the dressing room thinking, this is it, it's over. Didn't have a contract, just been sent off, lost 2-0. I'm thinking, this is it, this is done. Yeah. And then luckily, you know, it swung around and got a new deal, but I had another bad one for Wales. I remember we were playing Belgium in Cardiff, first game of a you know, new qualifying campaign. And before the game, Chris Coleman went, right, if we get a corner and they're breaking on us, just take the foul. We all get back in, because they were known for breaking quick. This is like De Bruyne, Hazard, proper team. So I think it was about 13 or 14 minutes in. We had a corner, they're breaking on us. I've brought down De Bruyne, as the gaffer told me to do, thinking, right, I'll take a yellow card, take the foul, get back in. I got a straight red. After like 12 minutes, and I think we lost the game 4-0 in the end or something like that. But even then, you're sat in the dressing room thinking, oh no, what have I done here?
Did you get much stick after that, like in the press?
Deserved, to be
really?
Honest.
Really?
Yeah, it was just stupid. Yeah. Stupid. But, you know, it happens, doesn't it? You make split-second decisions, and sometimes they're good, sometimes they're not so good. Yeah.
What are you doing when the boys come in from half-time? Are you just sat there? Like, do you have a shower, or
I was just sat there, head down, embarrassed, let the boys down. It's not a great feeling at all.
Yeah,
but the thing is that you were doing that for the team, weren't you?
Like, well, didn't mean to get sent off.
I should blame
the gaffer. I should blame Cookie, really. You know, he was telling us to take the foul and get back in, but probably not as forceful as I did it.
Dave, you went through you start out at Wimbledon in goal, and you were at Wimbledon. You're at this crazy time where they become MK Dons, one of the most controversial moments in kind of football league history. And I wondered, what was it like to be on the inside of that as it's happening? Because you obviously have the Wimbledon fans revolting at the time, but you're on the way to Milton Keynes. What was it like to be on the inside?
Yeah, I think I look back now and I think that is crazy what I went through. But again, because I was only 17, 18 when it happened, it was almost like, oh, so we're in Wimbledon. I think I played 2 games for Wimbledon. I think I made my debut at Burnley away in the champ. And it was like, oh, great. But then they said, right, now you're going to go to Milton Keynes. We're going to give you, you know, your allowance to go and rent somewhere. So it was just like a normal, everyone was doing it, because everyone was doing the same thing.
Yeah.
It was just like, you had to pick up your life. And I was only 18.
All that to move up there?
Were seen as obviously assets of the club.
Okay.
And they would not let you keep the name Wimbledon. So that was the FA. So they had to change their name to something. And they almost said, you're going to be called MK Dons, Milton Keynes Dons. Wow. So, you know, I had to then, you know, drive up to find a place. I was like, you know, room sharing.
Like moving club.
That was it. Everyone did the same thing. Because everyone did the same thing. It was almost like, oh, it's just the normal thing. But I look back now, I think that, imagine that happening now.
Mental.
Like,
I don't think it'd ever happen again.
It was crazy.
It was so controversial at the time.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, the chairman took a lot of stick for it. He had a vision. MK didn't have it. A club. Mm. So I understand the thinking behind it. And he admits, to be fair, the chairman, Pete Winkelman, that he's not a football man. You know, if he had time again, like, you know, would he have done things differently? Maybe. But his heart was in the right place of trying to save a club.
Well, you look back at it now, it's been successful, really.
Yeah, I know it's kind of worked out.
Massively
for both,
controversial,
both
but
parties,
I mean,
really,
it's worked out well for the club.
And I played in the first game that they met each other. So AFC Wimbledon played MK Dons. Oh, and that was horrific.
It was one of the fiercest rivalries in world football, I would say.
They hate each other. They hate each other. And I've been at clubs and that, you know, having police escorts for, it was like a League One game.
Yeah.
Like, it's mental. Like, going to AFC Wimbledon, it was at Kingstonia then, wasn't it? So to have that, and that's just the animosity they have towards each other.
How did they treat you? Because you're technically a former Wimbledon player as well as an MK.
Yeah, I don't think the two games, I think they see that as a...
Yeah.
And I lost both of them, so...
you spent a bit of time at Liverpool.
Yes.
And how was that?
That was... Yeah, I couldn't believe what was happening to me there. Like, obviously, I'd played, I think it was 25, 26 game. I was only 19 at the time for MK Dons then. And they needed an under-23s goalkeeper. So I thought... And my agent managed to get me a trial. They said, yeah, we'll take you. And it was probably a bit too much too soon. And even having the dad that I've had and being around that kind of dressing room at West Ham, Liverpool, when you go into Liverpool, the first day, I opened up the door and you turn around the corner and Gerrard was like literally from me to you away. And it actually took my breath away because it was like, I can't believe Steven Gerrard's.
I heard that when you walked in.
Well, yeah, so is my missus. But and just I wish I look back now and I think I could have put that to the side and just thought he's just a human being. Mm. Like, you know, you got Alonso, like, you know, players like Mascherano,
some team then
Sami Hupia, Dudek was there. Obviously, Pepe Reina just signed, and these are like players that I've been watching on you know Match of the Day and thinking, wow, I'm actually. In and around them all the time. Mm. And I found it tough because I couldn't believe it, but they didn't actually have a goalkeeper coach for the under-23s. So I was having to be an outfield player the whole time. And then they were like, now it's your turn to go and goal. Like, you want to do a session and go and play games. And I'd have one goalkeeping session. The under-18s would come over to Melwood. And I said, mentally, that was... It taught me how tough... mentally you have to be as a goalkeeper to be under them circumstances and still function.
Who's manager then? Rafa.
Rafa. Yeah. Rafa.
Wow, that's surprising.
And you would have been in and around the team the 2006 FA Cup final. I wonder,
Did we have to mention it?
I was there. Like, we got the train down and obviously I was in the Liverpool end and it was such a weird thing because obviously 3-3.
Yeah.
Like, and I was like, Like, obviously when we were, like West Ham was scoring and then obviously when Stevie scored that, I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. And then to go to the penalties was just like, it was just such a weird feeling that day of having such a connection. I think I still got the program at home.
Yeah.
Because it was such a big day for me to be there, but in the wrong end.
Yeah. God, that was lovely.
Yeah.
Did you celebrate any goals? You keep your hat? I
was celebrating like every time like they scored. I was like, yeah. And I was like, oh, like, yeah.
Gotta be careful.
Got a bit of sticks for it, to be fair. I can only imagine what that was like.
Well, it was in Cardiff as well. I had about 40 people there from Cardiff. I didn't actually play, I was on the bench, but I remember sitting on the bench. Matty Everton had come off 87 minute and we were 3-2 up. 90 minutes comes on the clock. And I remember turning to Matty going, I think we've won the cup. I'm going to be in faces with me FA Cup winners medal on. And then bang. And he only hit it, Stevie, because he had cramp.
That's it.
If he was like a normal bit of the game, he would have taken a touch, gone forward probably a bit. And they were all going down with cramp and he's hit it. And Shaq has flapped at one and it's gone in. Pains me every day.
I'm sure we'll get into the FA Cup final in this podcast in greater detail. But when you watch that Gerrard shot, you got Scaloni giving away the ball, which is like quite a random thing.
Yeah.
And then when Gerrard takes that shot, he's got like Yossi turns his back. There's another defender almost gets his foot. It just flies through the eye of the needle, that shot.
It literally stayed that half the way, didn't it? Yeah. The whole way. And then I've seen Shackle obviously getting across and it was just the power.
The power of it that late on.
Yeah. And just to bring Jimmy Walker up again, I've asked him about that shot. He says he would have saved that.
No. Of course he would have. Of course he would.
You'd still be in faces now if that happened. All right, West Ham fans, one way you can support Ironcast and help us rocket up the charts and beat off the competition from other official football clubs podcasts like Chelsea and like Spurs is to get a 5-star rating or review from you.
Support me and Ginger on the podcast, chuck us a 5-star rating review, and help us rocket up the charts where West Ham belong, at the top of the table. Back on with the show.
Let's wind the clock forward now. Was it June 2019? You're 33 years old at this point.
Yeah.
You must have been thinking, I can see my career tapering down now, you know, go take a position maybe in the lower leagues. But then West Ham come knocking at your door.
Yeah.
Where were you when you get that call? How does it happen?
Well, obviously, those we don't mention, that's who I was playing for at the time.
And South London and, team. With Lions on their crest. Let's leave it at that.
Leave it there.
But I was actually told... it was New Year's Eve actually, by the manager Neil Harris, that Dave, like, you know, we've got this, we've got Jordan Archer, we've got Ben Amos, we just don't see it, you know, you playing for Millwall again, so it's best for me and best for you to kind of leave. And I was gutted, like, because I thought, no, I believe that I'm good enough to play ahead of these boys, and it was almost taken away from that. And just so happened, 5 days later, on the 5th of Jan, I remember, I'll never forget it, I hit half volley, still obviously looking for a club in the meantime. And Ben Amos, he caught Ben Amos right on the end of his finger and he broke his finger. Oh, no. So within 5 days, all of a sudden, he wanted me to leave, almost trying to force me out to then, right, Dave, I need you on the bench now.
Yeah, so that's tough mentally though, eh?
Yeah, it was. And this went on and the team wasn't doing well. You know, they were near the relegation, I think in the relegation zone at the time. And it was another 6 weeks. And by that time, Ben had just had an operation on his finger. He was just coming back. And the team weren't doing... Jordan was doing okay, but I think Neil was like that. He'd seen me in training. I that's one thing I've always done. Every day I went into training, I give 100%. Yeah. Like, I've never been the strongest, never been the quickest. I'm not going to sit here and say to you, I'm the best goalkeeper that's ever existed, because I know I'm not. Mm. But I give it everything. And that's what I did in training. And... we were playing Birmingham away on the Wednesday, so it was Tuesday morning, and Ben had just started training again. And as I walked out, like, Chopper pulled Jordan, and I thought, well, that's weird. And I walked down to the goalkeeping coach, Lee Turner, and he went, has he told you? I went, oh, has he put me down to third choice again? He went, no, you're starting tomorrow.
See, I thought he's gone the other way.
What? 1 minute you think you're leaving, next minute you're starting.
Yeah.
Mental.
So I ended up playing, and... we won 2-0. So, and then it was just like, I can't believe it. I hadn't played. I think it's 14, 15 months at that time. Really? I hadn't played. So going into that game, I thought, I've got nothing to lose, because like, I haven't played. I've played a couple of reserve games, but I felt like I did well in the game. And we had Brighton on the Sunday, and this game, I had a really good game until the last minute. And I made the biggest mistake in the quarter, I think it was quarterfinals of the FA Cup of my career. And I thought, that's me done. And it took me another 2 weeks, because we had Leeds away, the next away game. It's a tough place to go in. They were flying at the time. End up saving a penalty from Bamford. And I played the next 10 games, I think it was, to the end of the season, and did really well and managed to stay up. But the pressure and the anxiety that I felt after making that mistake, feeling like I'd let everyone down at the club, and the manager down, because he backed me, was still hanging over me. So I'd gone from not having a contract in the January to then all of a sudden we said, Dave, we want you to stay. Well, here's another thing. And I was like, you know, Neil, like, you know, I know you didn't fancy me. Well, what's changed? He goes, well, you've done really well for us and this and the other. But then by that time, I'd spoke to Javi Valero, who's my goalkeeping coach at Liverpool. And he said, look, Dave, there might be a third choice role here for you at West Ham. I was like, oh my God,
please, come and get me.
I can't believe it. And it didn't matter whether West Ham were in the Premier League it was my club. And that's what I had to tell, you know, Neil. I just said, Neil, like, and they were offering me more and more, and they offered me more to stay at Millwall than to come here.
West Ham. Brilliant.
And I thought, I just can't turn that down, not to come to my boyhood team. So that was kind of the build up of walking into.
Neil Harris all right with you?
He was good as gold. And he said to me, "Go," because Liverpool was his team. And he said, I can understand it, because if Liverpool came in for me, I think I would have to go. Yeah. But he said, you'd be playing this, that and the other. But I said, I just couldn't turn down.
Yeah, turn it down, it's not coming again, is it?
No, you know, I'm 33 years old.
It's your last chance to play for your boyhood club.
And so let's be honest, like, I was coming in third choice. Did I ever think I was probably going to play? No.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about that. Like, what is that mentality? Is it a strange one as a goalkeeper? Because you're coming in knowing I'm not necessarily going to play.
Yeah. But I think, again, what will go back to my personality is like, because I just wanted to help the club. So if I was going to come in every day and give everything, and if I could make people around me better, let's just say like Lucas and he's an unbelievable goalkeeper. But if I could even get into a position where I can compete with him, that for me was like,
That was enough.
That was the goal.
Yeah.
That was the goal. Just to try and push Lucas as much as I could. And he always used to, like, he goes, Dave, why do you always want to win? Like, we've had like, a few fallouts and he's had a little go at me sometimes. But I just can't help it. It's just, that's just my personality.
Yeah. It's a weird one training with goalkeepers. I wanted to ask you, actually. A few times I've been down to kind of Rush Green and watch the players training. And that's the goalkeepers. You're off in like one corner.
Yeah,
they are. The players are off in another. It's like you're totally separate a lot of the day.
They're their own breed, aren't they?
Yeah.
Goalkeepers.
Yeah. And there's probably one or two goalkeepers in my whole, like, you know, I've been a pro for 20 years. And in that group, there's only one or two that have been a bit, you know, not the nicest. Because you know that at the end of the day, it's the manager's choice. And all you can do is what you can do in training. And to start serving bad or not talk to someone,
that's naughty, isn't it?
It's just, you
have
don't
seen
do
that
it.
Happen.
It's happened to me. Yeah, it's happened
someone
to me.
Someone thinks they should be playing, not
yes,
serving
yeah,
the ball.
Yeah, so someone didn't speak to me for 3 months.
Really?
Wouldn't speak to me in training.
That's
and we're training
song.
With each other
that's
every day.
That's intense when you're there every day.
It's making it awkward. And I was having a little bit of a tough time and I managed to come through it, but he was trying to make it as hard as possible for
that's
me.
That's naughty, that.
That's crazy.
That's people's person. Sometimes you just got to accept it. That's what makes, you know, dressing rooms really complex and hard to create sometimes, isn't it? So
you come in, the three goalkeepers.
Yeah.
There's ahead of you, Roberto, who we will get on to, and Lucas Fabianski. September 2019, Lucas gets injured.
Yeah.
In comes Roberto. And, you know, we were not going to dwell on this because he had a torrid time. That's out there.
Yeah.
I wanted to know how you felt when Roberto's having a torrid time, you know, he's letting in goals that he maybe shouldn't be letting in.
Yeah.
How are you feeling on the bench now? Because you've come in to be the third goalkeeper
and
you can feel this momentum building, like, give Dave a chance. How was it for you in that moment?
Yeah. I could feel the pressure around. And for me, again, I just wanted Roberto to do well. Like, I genuinely, hand on heart, I say that I wanted the club to do well and I wanted him to succeed. But then also in the back of your mind, I remember seeing an interview from you and you were saying, you've got to play Dave Martin.
Yeah, I remember.
I was like, Jesus, don't say that.
He's the savior.
If I've actually got to play, like, do you know what I mean? So I could feel that side and supporting him in training as much as I can after games, talking to him and, you know, how do you think you're going? And it was tough. It was tough because, again, you want the club to do well. And you, like I said, you could feel it in the stands. You could feel it on social media. You could feel it in, like, you know, reading online. And for Roberto, I felt really sorry for him.
It's a tough one for that, like, goalkeeper or any player. You know, when it's on you and the fans are on you and you know yourself, you're not playing well. Half the time as a manager, you're better off just taking them out, isn't you? You know, you can stick with them and they might turn. I remember that time and I was calling for you to play, like you say, and he just needed to be taken out of the firing line.
Yeah.
It's hard as a goalkeeper though, isn't it? Because there's so much spotlight on you. As a position, if the goalkeeper changes, it's really noticeable in a way that maybe you could swap a defender out and no one really notices. Yeah.
And I don't know whether Pellegrini knew my name at that stage. So it was like...
That I forgot.
But in training, I felt like I was still... And he was coming up to me and he was like, David, keep going. Keep doing what you're doing. Like, you're doing really well. So he was saying stuff to me during that period. So maybe he had half an eye on think about it. But to still do it, that takes, you know, a lot of balls, doesn't it, really? Like,
And what was Roberto like in training? Was he...
So he was,
could
he was
you
a good
see
goalkeeper.
That it was affecting him?
You could see it was definitely the last three or four games. It was really getting to him after Burnley, especially, you know, even the players you could see were really starting to turn negatively towards him. Which was really hard to watch as well. And you could see coming in the morning, he didn't want to speak. But then, you know, you get into training, you try and make it as bubbly as possible and try and, again, support him. That's all you can do at that stage when I was like number two. So, and in going into games, he was actually making some saves. But like what we said before is that you're judged as a goalkeeper by your mistakes. and he was making mistakes. There's no getting around it. He was making mistakes. And everyone will remember, if you make 9 unbelievable saves, they'll remember the one out of 10. And that's the nature of the position, unfortunately.
So Chelsea away, the most romantic result in West Ham history, up there. How did Pellegrini break the news to you?
So it was on the Thursday, actually, and I'm not going to do a Chilean accent, but I was walking out to my car and I just heard it say, David. And I turned around and it was Pellegrini. And he just says, look, I'm not saying I'm going to start you on Saturday, but if I do, are you ready? And my stomach was doing somersaults. And I was just like, yeah, I'm ready.
You're not going like, to say no.
Do you know what I mean? So, he just almost said like, okay. So I kind of had it in my mind already. And it was the goalkeeping coach who we do like pre-game clips. And he started going through Chelsea's attacking threats. And like, he started off with Giroud straight away. And I was thinking, oh my God, this guy's won like the World Cup. Like, I've been playing against like League One, Championship, League Two players. And so like, and he just looked at me and across it. And before he started, he went, David, you're in a really tough position here. Like, just do what you can. You're up against it. So I was thinking, we hadn't won in 17 years, I think it was, at Stamford Bridge. They'd lost 7 in a row. I had my own pressure, which I put on myself, which was, I couldn't let my family down. I couldn't let my friends who were in the stand, I knew we were going to be in the stand there that day. I couldn't let the supporters down. I couldn't let my teammates down. I couldn't let the goalkeeping coach down. So all these things, I was sitting on the end of my bed in that hotel in Chelsea thinking, I don't know whether I can do this. At 33 years old, I've never felt pain, excruciating nerves, like that, of fear of letting people down.
That's an incredible amount of pressure, especially given you're the son of a West Ham legend. Yeah.
And like what I said before, I look at like Dec and I see Dec going into games and he's genuinely enjoying the build up and going into it. And I think, why is he enjoying that so much? And it took me a while to work it out. I think because he knows he's good enough to be here.
Yeah.
With me,
you had that doubt that you were good enough.
I doubted myself. I've just made the biggest mistakes. So it was only 5 or 6 months before that in my career. Before that, and I'm thinking, can I actually do this? Am I good enough to be here? Do I deserve to be here? That was what was going through my head.
And
the build up for 3 or 4 days. I remember saying to my mum, I was like, Mum, I don't know if I can do this. And she was like, Dave, you'll be fine. Dad, my dad was the same as Dave, you'll be fine. Just go and do it. Just go and enjoy it. I was like, go and enjoy it. All right. You know, easier said than done.
Is it because, like, using Dec as an example, like, those pressure moments slowly build up when you're a professional footballer? You get teased into games and you substitute and you slowly ingratiate yourself. And you're at 33 and you're playing in the Premier League for the first time. And not only that, you're playing at Stamford Bridge, a big rivalry.
I think the more pressure that was on, the bigger games, like we had to win, like you're down the bottom or an FA Cup, I used to enjoy them more.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? The nerves and the feeling of playing like the chips are down, you've got to perform, like you say, putting that pressure on yourself. I remember playing out here against Swansea and we were down at the bottom and I had the game of my life out here. I think we won 1-0 and it was like, it was big. Like we got 3 points and it probably kept us up and I just absolutely loved it. But like, it's mad. Every player is different. Every player is different. Yeah.
But at 33, I think when you're young, you always think, oh, I'm going to get another chance. I'm 20, I'm making my Premier League debut. Yeah. You know, I'll get another, you know, how many other Premier League games? I knew at 33, this was my last chance. This is my club. Like, in 20 years' time, am I going to be the goalkeeper that played in this game and it went well? Or am I going to be the goalkeeper that everyone remembers for messing up? Everyone kept on saying to me, anyone can do better than Roberto. I said, no. Like, do you know what I mean? If this doesn't go well, this is the rest of my life that I've got to...
Do you think the boys in the team that day realised that you were that nervous and it meant that much to you? Because we spoke about it earlier on, the boys were brilliant. You were brilliant, but the boys in front of you were brilliant that night.
Honestly, they were warriors, like gladiators in front of me. Like, and they, you know, had thrown their bodies on the line. And for me, we were the better team. Like, we should have been 2-3-0 up. Mick had a few chances. I think Felipe had one. But, you know, Angelo in front of me, Fabian in front of me were just literally heading everything away, blocking everything. Obviously, Kress getting up. Kress for 7 games, like, you know, he scored the goal, didn't he?
Yeah.
he was like literally on the touch, cutting in on his right foot. Can you believe it? On his right foot.
On his right foot.
Yeah. Bends it into the far corner. Yeah. And he takes the mick out of me saying, God, it's all about you, innit? Like I said, I scored a winning goal. And listen, and like, you know, obviously we just have like a lot of fun with Chris and stuff. But they all knew. I mean, I remember Nobes even before the game. Like I think I felt, you know what I said about the nerves? Until 5 minutes before I walked out. And then you walk out and all these fireworks are going off and that. And
then thinking, you're in it then.
And you're thinking, right, it's another game of football.
Yeah.
But what else settled me down was I walked to the goal, and that's when it started. I heard that chant of my name for the first time. And obviously I get goosebumps now thinking about it. And what they did for me that day, like I could never repay them. Like they got me through that game, and the whole game they were singing my name because they wanted me to do so well. And Nobes ended up, like obviously I'd go down to one knee on my line and I say a little prayer. And as I looked up, I see Nobes, he was walking towards me.
Is that a good thing?
Yeah, I know.
Having a little moment and you see Nobes walking towards you.
And you never know what you're going to get with Nobes, isn't it? And he just put his arm around me. He said, Dave, whatever happens now, you're a Premier League goalkeeper.
Yeah, brilliant.
So whatever you do, don't F it up. So a little smile, little joke, and just settled me down a little bit.
I know exactly where he's got that from.
Yeah.
Wally Downs, that's right.
Really?
Yeah. I remember going on sub with Wally Downs, similar sort of thing. We'd be winning in it. He'd always do that terrible substitution. You know, you're winning 1-0, stick a centre half on last 5 minutes. Nothing ever comes from it. If you draw, it's your fault. You've gone on centre half. So he'd be 1-0 up, say at Upton Park. Wally Downs would put his arm around my shoulder and go, right, Ginge, whatever you do, don't this up, basically. And that was it, on you go. And that's where Nobes has got it from. Brilliant.
So did the nerves start fading once the game started?
5 minutes, like I said, when I started hearing my name, and you know, that feeling of thinking, right, it's just another game of football. And you get your first few touches, and I was lucky that like Mason Mount, he put a cross in, and it was like quite a really nice cross to come and get, and I come and took it. And then it was like a save where I think Kovacic come inside, he hit one, it bounced just in front of me, and it kind of ricocheted down. I was thinking, oh, and then I seen Giroud, and literally I pooed my pants. He was running in. I managed to get up, stick my leg out, make a block, and then there was another someone else running in. I'm diving, and the biggest cheer I got right from the whole day was from behind, because I said I could just feel they wanted me to do so well. Half time came, and I remember walking in, and you know the press box at Chelsea, it's just behind the dugout. And I said, Dad, that's where Dad always sits. And he was there, and he looked white.
Did he?
He looked like he was in pain, like almost. And I can only imagine, like, because I obviously, when I watch Joe play, I feel the same, like, because I want him to do so well. And he knew what a big moment it was for me. And that, all them emotions, like I said, and the second half was almost like a blur. And again, I didn't really have loads to do.
I can imagine your dad was sort of, he was probably be more nervous than you, and being in the stand, being next, you know, he knows he can't affect the game, and watching you, not wanting to make a mistake, obviously.
I think when I was on the pitch, that's painful. When I felt like in control, and him being in the stands, he was not in control, you know, over everything. And it, like I said, the goalkeeper takes one moment. You can have a really good game, and one moment can kind of all come tumbling down. And I remember that I've got the image in my head of John Moss was the referee. He's not my favourite referee, I've got to say.
I don't think he's anyone's favourite referee.
That this day it was. And I see him, he obviously put the whistle to his lips, and he blew the whistle, and I just see Nobes go, yes! And that was the moment that I realised I've been a part of a team that just kept a clean sheet at Stamford Bridge after the run that we've just been on. I hadn't let my family down. I hadn't let, you know, the supporters down. I hadn't let my teammates down. And I just dropped to my knees. I didn't know what else to do. And obviously, I was just, it's so emotional. And it felt within 2 seconds that I had like 10 players around me, like picking me up. And I think they knew leading up to the game how much that one moment would mean to me. And I'll be forever grateful to all them players for that day, the way they performed in front of me and gave me a chance of being a part of that day.
So, it's like the end of Rocky. You know, you're running up in the stands hugging your dad and the players. Yeah. It's like I can almost hear the Rocky theme in the background. It's such an incredible story. Like, it needs to be a movie made about it. Have you kept your jersey from that day? Have you kept?
Of course,
framed.
Dad, and you there was a famous video films you're going up into the stands to see Dad.
That's it. So obviously I went down to and give hugs to the goalkeeping coach, all the players and stuff, and I went down because the supporters were down the other end now. and they were so noisy. They literally the noisiest compared to the whole of Stamford Bridge. They were amazing. And I thought, how do I play them? But, you know, so just, you know, you give your applause and just thank them so much. And then as I was walking in and I seen Dad again, and I could see he was like emotional. He was 50 yards away and I could see he was emotional. And I thought, if there's one moment in my career, my life that I'm going to share with him, this is it.
This is it.
Because 5 years before, I think, at the time it was 3 years before that, I was thinking about retiring because I couldn't get a club before I went to Millwall. I didn't sign until mid-September, I think it was. And I was thinking, I'm just going to have to pack this in. And he was there supporting me, him and my mum, like through it all the bad times, all the mistakes that I'd made, all the good times that I'd made. And this was the one moment I'm going to get to share with him, probably the biggest moment in my life, apart from my kids and getting married and that.
Yeah.
And it was just great to share that with him. And he was stone-faced all the way up until I got about 2 yards away from him.
And he went.
And I went, brilliant. So yeah, we were quite an emotional family, as you can tell.
You played a really massive role over that little run of games that you had. You got like Southampton away, another clean sheet as well. How was the run you had in goal in total?
Yeah, we played Wolves the next game. I think we lost 2-0. And we had a chance. I think I'll never forgive Snoddy. Snoddy missed a chance to go 1-1, and I think that would have been like unbelievable, you know, because I thought we was in that game. Then we played Arsenal at home here, and we were 1-0 up, and I'd still take the mickey out of Chris. We were 1-0 up, and he felt a little thing in his calf, so I call him the pee heart.
Oh, really? Yeah, he's been caught that once or twice.
And he went off, and we ended up losing 3-1, unfortunately. But then the next game was Southampton, so the pressure was on. So I knew that Chelsea win bought Pellegrini a bit of time, and then there was two more losses, and then there was pressure on this Southampton game now. And I thought, we've got to go and win it. And we battered them. Like, we won 1-0. Danny Ings played, Ward-Prowse played.
Yeah, yeah. And good, it was Southampton just, team then as well.
Yeah.
Proper team.
Yeah, they were okay. So in the last kick of the game, I got, it was a goal kick and pulled my quad. Then that was it. That was kind of my starts done as a West Ham player. But, you know, got the clean sheet. They thought I was messing around trying to buy time and that. And Pellegrini was like, Dave, were you just buying time? I said, no, I've actually pulled my quad. Like, no,
this is real.
So, yeah. So, and then Lucas managed to come back in and obviously it didn't go 100% well, and Pellegrini lost his job and then the gaffer came in there.
Make sure you're a part of our new European journey. Limited tickets are remaining for our UEFA Europa League match with Olympiacos. Adult tickets start at just £35, with kids starting at £15. To buy, head to eticketing.co.uk/WHUFC. Two injured goalkeepers and one. It's like Final Destination for goalkeepers.
Only at West Ham, I suppose. But
And if it's worth saying, you know, so you joined in the summer of 2019, but you were with West Ham until 2022.
Mm-hmm.
And so when Pellegrini goes and Moyes comes in, and towards the end of that first season you had, we have a tremendous run at the end of the season. And that basically becomes the form for the next couple of years, really.
Yeah.
And I wonder, what was it like to be in that team with like the start of Moyes' second era and things turning around? What was it like to be on the inside?
Yeah, I mean, to see the gaffer work day in, day out, like, I love him. Like, I think he's very demanding. Like, he wants, you know, 100%. And if you can, 110. Like, he's like that with every single player. And it is tough to function under game after game after game. But he knows how to play with his teams. He knows his strengths and knows his weaknesses. In the dressing room, I've got to say, it's one of the best dressing rooms I've ever been in. Mm. Like, I was on loan at Leeds, and that was a good one with Snodgrass and Bradley Johnson, people like that. But this, for all round ability and camaraderie, it was by far the best. We were winning games as well.
Spoke about the dressing room before. It seems to have always been here at West Ham since I was here, but Nobbs was a massive part of it. Nick.
Yeah.
Like, just getting people, I've spoke about it on here, I've spoke about it to the press. He was just, such an easy dressing room to go into. Anytime I've been, it was something so comfortable about going in and performing. And like you say, when you've got someone like Nobbs in the middle of it, driving it, like you say, he can give you the best advice. He'd make you laugh if you wanted to laugh, or he'd just be a mate to chat to. And I think we spoke about it before. He was massive in that dressing room for the whole time I was here, and certainly when Dave was here.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think the training route does get a lot of stick for not being like Tottenham or Leicester, you know. But West Ham, I think traditionally has always been the camaraderie inside the heart and is the heart and soul of the club. It's people that have, you know, players and managers, they come and go, but it's the people inside the building that will always be there and be, for me, the tradition of the club, and why it will always be strong because of that.
Yeah. And can we have a quick word on Yavi Valero? Because he came in under Pellegrini, but he stayed throughout the Moyes era. He's been at the club for years and years now. He must like it.
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, obviously, I had him at Liverpool.
And goalkeeper coach, he was at Real Madrid for a time as well.
His resume is unbelievable. Like, you know, been at Napoli, Real Madrid, Chelsea. He obviously had a stint in China. And, you know, there's goalkeeping coaches, and there's what he does is the analytical side of the small, fine details. And I think, you know, if you even speak to Lucas about it, like, you know, he played a lot of games, you know, in the Premier League for Arsenal and Swansea. But when he came here and under Xavi, the detail that Xavi gives you takes your game on another step. And I knew that already. But even when I came back, he'd gone on again, you know. So he's really one of the best goalkeeping coaches in the world. Not that I know every goalkeeping coach, yeah. But
that's interesting on the detail point, because I think we've got quite a good record at saving penalties and winning penalty shootouts, haven't we? Feel like? Well, don't know. That's just me.
Have you just made that
up? Yeah, I'm making that up, but I feel quite confident.
Yeah, Lucas always fancy, definitely. Yeah. And obviously, Alphonse made that great save, didn't he, against Chelsea? Yeah, he must be doing something right.
Yeah. So, now you're out the back, you've retired from playing. Are you a West Ham fan again?
I'm not retired just yet.
You've gone early.
Do you know what you'd be
still
surprised?
Still life in the old boy, yeah.
No. Yeah. Still life in these old legs. Yeah, a lot of people retired me probably about, you know, 6 years ago. So I'm currently training at Southend, as well as taking the goalkeepers. So they're under an embargo. So they've only got one goalkeeper. So I'm just staying fit. I'm a free agent. So if I play, then great. But if there's a coaching role, you know, that's where I am in my career now. I'm ready to do both, and I feel like I've got enough experience to do both.
I think you'd be brilliant. Know. Just chatting to you, I think you'd be brilliant.
Thanks,
coach.
Mate. I appreciate
done
that.
Done all your badges and all that? Yeah,
so I've got B's. I've applied for my A. So that's next September. I'm due to go on my A license, goalkeeping A license. So, it's a lot of it is obviously experience, but you need the qualifications to go with it. I understand that.
Need a chance to get someone take a chance.
Yeah, last year I had loads of experience with, again, the analytical side. So I've got my little MacBook now, analysing training, analysing games. I know it's a bit boring, but
it's good.
It's definitely all the experience that I earned last year is will hold me in good stead for the next how many years.
Yeah. And what about any third generation Martins coming through? Who's next?
Yeah, I've got two girls. So Ruby and Sky, 7 and 3. I've got a few nephews that potentially could be okay.
Yeah.
So old Ethan, he's the eldest. So yeah, watch this space.
Building the dynasty.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, let's finish with some quick fire questions, Dave. I just want you to relax and just whatever.
top of your head.
Quick fire questions. First one is favourite best friend in football.
Can I have three?
Yeah.
So I've got Dean Lewington, we've got Aaron Cresswell, Nobes.
Oh, he's four.
Four and Snoddy.
Oh, nice. Snoddy. Snoddy's character. Yeah.
Some five-a-side team.
favourite holiday destination?
I want to say Caledor, Mallorca, because that's where we used to go. Dad used to go every year.
Nice.
Been 12 years running when we was kids, so.
Lovely.
Good
memories. Which actor, when we make the Dave Martin West Ham story film.
Which I think we should.
Which we should. Who's going to play you?
What's his name? He's out of Band of Brothers. Major Winter.
Don't know
his name.
What's he in? Billions?
No. I just do gardening now. Dave, I haven't got time for telly.
Whoever gardening that is in Band of Brothers. What's the character called?
Major Winter.
All right.
Yeah. Major Winter, Band of Brothers. Yeah.
We'll Google it later.
All right.
You can only listen to one musical artist for the rest of your life.
Oh, this is a new one.
We've got a list. I'll mix them up sometimes.
Drake.
Drake,
yeah.
I wasn't expecting that.
No.
I wasn't expecting that at all.
You know,
that's a bit left field for me, that.
Yeah. Is there an opponent from all your years playing football that you would hate to bump into?
As in bump into to just play against
street,
again?
Just in the street. Yeah.
There was a player called Joe Garner. I don't remember Joe Garner. He used to be at Preston, Blackburn. But every time I used to play against him, he always used to leave one on me. Like, and I thought I'd done him, to be fair, in one game. But it was the wrong player. It was my other mate.
Brilliant.
And I liked the player. He was my mate from Liverpool. Her Walshy. So, yeah, Joe Garner.
And then final question. Best moment in a West Ham shirt?
I think we can all answer
Chelsea.
Don't even bother us. Dave, thank you so much for all the brilliant memories and thank you for your time today. It's been fascinating. I've enjoyed it so much.
Brilliant.
One more time. Dave Martin.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Gene.
Cheers, mate.
Sports Social Podcast Network.